Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. A corruption probe from Los Angeles County reached its long hand to Sacramento yesterday when FBI agents raided the offices of State Senator Ron Calderon and the Latino Legislative Caucus. The Montebello Democrat is the focus of the investigation, but beyond that, law enforcement officials aren't talking. Calderon's attorney blasted the raid, saying, quote, "The government is out of control." That said, the LA Times notes this isn't the first time Calderon has attracted interest over allegations of corruption. A few years ago, he dipped into a legal defense fund to pay for a fundraiser, golf outings, and a private airplane service. Just in time for this year's wildfire season, the U.S. Forest Service has announced a major policy change. It will send aircraft out after sundown. Forest Service planes and helicopters have been grounded since a pair crashed back in 1977. But as Congressman Adam Schiff of Burbank points out, local agencies have been sending people up.
It was increasingly hard to defend why they thought it was safe to call in L.A. County and L.A. City to do nighttime drops, but it wasn't safe enough for them to do it.
Congress became interested in the Forest Service no nighttime flying policy after two firefighters died battling the station fire in 2009. Critics say nighttime flying could have helped keep that blaze from getting out of control in its early stages. Already, the Forest Service has been offering up a locally based plane to help with the Powerhouse fire currently raging between Castaic and Lancaster. The agency's night helicopter is undergoing final safety checks and could be ready this week. The Powerhouse fire has charred more than 32,000 acres, destroyed at least 6 homes and damaged several others. From wildfires to tsunamis now, scientists at Stanford may have found a way to build a better warning system for those, as KQED science editor Craig Miller explains.
When earthquakes rumble below the ocean floor, they can trigger the big killer waves we call tsunamis, but they also make sound waves, and those race ahead at 10 times the speed of the ocean waves.
These sound waves are very sensitive to seafloor, vertical seafloor uplift, exactly the same thing that's exciting the tsunamis.
Eric Dunham is the geophysicist whose team stumbled on that connection when they were modeling the 2011 tsunami that claimed more than 15,000 lives in Japan and later did nearly $60 million in damage along the California coast.
When making plots of that, we just saw incredibly huge amplitude sound waves. It wasn't something that we were really expecting. It is something that's obvious in retrospect.
Those sound waves are the sonic signature that, if captured in real time, could give scientists a critical piece of information that's been missing. The height of the waves likely to make landfall. Current systems can estimate the magnitude of an undersea quake, but not if the fault slipped far below the ocean floor or close to it.
Shallow slip is what causes seafloor uplift and hence large tsunamis.
Dunham says that tracking that data could have meant another 10 or 15 minutes warning of the immensity of the waves heading for Japan. This kind of sonic monitoring wouldn't be cheap or simple. It would require a network of underwater mics called hydrophones, listening for subsea quakes, and fast computers to quickly analyze the data. For the California Report, I'm Craig Miller.
Even as the state begins to restore some funding to community colleges, years of budget cuts have done serious damage. Specialized programs are still an easy target for trimming. Chris Richard tells us about one program at risk in L.A. County's San Fernando Valley, the Pierce College Farm Center.
It's a final exam review session in Professor Leland Shapiro's Principles of Animal Science class.
Okay, so let's look at this first question. A herpes viral disease of chickens that causes tumor production. Answer C. How many agree?
Shapiro strides back and forth, firing questions.
What's this bone right here? Anyone know what it's called? Yeah, one of the choices is spatula. Every semester I have people that put that down.
Shapiro's pre-veterinary program is very successful. 22 veterinary schools accept his students on an equal footing with graduates of four-year colleges. Not only are the community college courses much cheaper than they would be at a four-year school, but Pierce students get into graduate school 2 years early. One of the program's biggest assets is its 220-acre farm, which offers future veterinarians a lot of practical experience. Still, as he drives the dirt roads on the farm, Shapiro points out the signs of neglect.
This is our sheep unit, what's left of it. We used to have 250 sheep there. I have 7 ewes, which are the females. And I have 4 babies, lambs, and then I have 1 ram there now. And that's it, from 250 down to what you see here. That's it.
There have been similar losses. 25 years ago, Pierce had 450 cattle. Now, the herd numbers 11. There used to be 6,000 chickens. Now there are 33. The staff of farmhands is long gone, replaced by part-time student workers whose pay comes from charitable donations.
They don't open up courses. They don't hire teachers. They don't give us workers.
That's Ben Merkel. He's president of the Pre-Veterinary Club.
I could start applying to vet schools, ideally, in another year. I worry about this program being in existence in the time for me to start applying.
Professor Shapiro also fears that when he retires in another 2 years, the college will let his department and the farm die. College District Trustee Scott Svonkin says he's committed to both Shapiro's students and the farm, but he can't ignore budgetary facts.
The dollar that the state gives us for a class is the same for an English class or a math class, it is for a class where we have to have cows. Cows and a teacher are more expensive than just a teacher and a book.
The college district has lost more than $100 million in state funding since 2008. That's meant sweeping cuts in class offerings and limits on the numbers of students allowed per class, and an increased state emphasis on core academic subjects like English, math, and science required for transfer to state universities has meant less money for other programs. But Jim Ashwanden, executive director of the California Agricultural Teachers Association, says other schools have met such challenges.
When the college itself decides that this is going to be an important part of what they are and who they are, additional resources are made available, you build a program, and it's the old adage of, you know, you build it, then they will come.
Ashwanden points out that Pierce officials have repeatedly entertained development proposals that would have spelled the disappearance of the farm into the surrounding suburbs. For instance, he remembers a squabble in the late 1980s over a scheme to turn part of the farm into a golf driving range. These days, college officials are studying development proposals that they say are more compatible with the farm and that may also help to finance it. They're also working on a plan to solicit donations from agriculture-related businesses. But they admit that in the competition for corporate dollars, community colleges have a tough sell. For the California Report, I'm Chris Richard.
That's the California Report for Wednesday, June 5th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Mary Van Voorhees Fund and the Follis Family Fund for coverage of climate change. The California Teachers Association, celebrating 150 years of advocating for all students, educators, and California's public schools and colleges. And Barracuda Networks, innovators of simple solutions to complex IT problems, such as data storage, compression, and disaster recovery. Barracuda.com.